There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. Phone number, same as it ever was, but if you're new to the show, it's cool. Write this one down. Put it in the contacts. 343-0106 for a call or a text. 343-0106. And with the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can also hit that microphone icon on the front page, lets you record a message, emails to the show, and we can play it back here on the air. All right, as I mentioned at the beginning of last hour, good to get this man back in studio. Last time he was here, he was campaigning for the job of mayor of Bay Minette. He is now mayor-elect of Bay Minette. Joshua Brown joins us. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
And
again,
you said that. We talked about it today. If you get elected, because I felt something with you when you were in here. I said, this guy has got promise. I don't know if it's this election or election in the future. You had it. And I said, man, come back and see me. And you did. So thank you.
Well, I try my best to be a man of my word.
You've lived up to it. So, I mean, I can go through all the cliche of, like, campaigning. It's not an easy task, especially when you have a full-time gig. You're working and campaigning out there. But you did something. Now, I know reading about you before you even came in last time and since, that working in the community, being active in the community was not new to you. It's not like you just kind of transitioned to it into a campaign.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, it was. So I've been in the community working probably maybe 26 years.
Wow, so you have some tenure.
I was
there,
a little boy. I was a little boy, as they say, knee high to a grasshopper. Mm-hmm. And I watched my parents work in the community. And so when I became of age around 15 years old, I started volunteering in other capacities in community organizations, whether it was the Key Club in school or whether it was at church and doing some of the activities with the youth groups that served the community. And then I eventually got with Volunteers of America and became their music teacher and assistant director for Light of the City in Bay Minette, where we hosted several events for the community and working with the chamber and all. So that all of that is in my background with some other things that I'm probably overlooking right now.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, just aside, and then we'll keep talking about you, but having family here, having mom here, I've said this in the past, when you take the kids, I don't know, maybe you're exceptional probably, but mom and dad forcing you to do things, like giving back to the community. Like when mom and dad would do things, we're going to I don't want to do the thing. But you end up building like a muscle memory or a habit. And then one day you wake up as kind of a man and go, oh, I see why this is right and good. But, I was drugged to it for a long time.
Yeah, my parents definitely drugged me.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom made all four of us. I'm the youngest of the four kids. She made all four of us actually get out there and do work in the community, and my dad was the enforcer.
Okay.
Several of my friends that I graduated with that we just grew up together, they're now working in the community as well, because we were able to see with the guidance of our elders what that return on that investment looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Because we went to college and we came back home and we began to contribute to the community. But also those who we directly impacted, we saw that 12-year-old who may have been troubled at that age, but when he was 16, he had turned things around and he graduated as valedictorian of his class the next year. So
that's some good gasoline for the engine, too. When you see the results of your efforts, it kind of makes you want to keep doing it.
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay, looking at what happened here in Bay Minette, you campaigned hard and you really won. not like Mobile. We didn't have to have all the runoff stuff. You won. You turned out number. Voter turnout in Bay Minette was some of the, which, once again, I say this to everybody. I celebrate voter turnouts, but we're still not doing what we should do.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, son, you now have a D in the class and not an F, but it's better. But it's, so I do want to see, but you got a higher turnout than most municipalities around here in Bay Minette.
Yes. It people were ready for a change, and I believe that they were waiting on that one someone who they felt could actually institute that change. And I'm a person, I listen to the people. I listen to what their pains are and what their wants and needs are. And those are the things that we campaigned on. Mm-hmm. We listened, and we took those into application along the campaign trail. We stopped at the local businesses. We had social events at the local businesses, injecting them with that cash flow, but also engaging with various members of the community to make sure that they feel heard and they're seen.
You know, and I think it, well, I don't think it obviously worked. And what is interesting, too, is something I talk about, where I want to see us going forward. If everybody doesn't know, so Joshua's a black guy, I'm a white guy, so everybody knows. Okay. So you look at the city of Mobile. Mm-hmm. When the city of Mobile was majority white, we elected a black mayor. When the city was majority black, we elected a white mayor, Sandy Stimson. Bay Minette, majority white, elects a black mayor. I like these stories, too, because I think when you engage with people about how you can fix things, at a certain point, people go, well, that's just the best person for the job.
Yes.
You know, let's get the person. Who cares how much melanin somebody has in their skin? Let's get the person. Oh, okay, well, that guy, that's a white guy. He does pretty good. Okay, that's a white guy. There's a black guy here, a black woman, a white, yeah. You know, just pick the person who does the job best.
Because when it's all settled, it's not based off of the color of your skin. It is based off
of obviously it's not.
Yeah, it's the qualifications that you do hold and the character that you have. You know, I was very vulnerable out there on the campaign trail, and I showed my heart to the people who I was able to engage with, and 877 of them chose me to be their mayor. And for the 751 that voiced their opinion to, it's up to me now to reassure them that I'm the mayor for everyone.
Yeah,
not just one side.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's the reason you had success, though, because you were running against an incumbent. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an up-for-grab seat. I mean, beating the incumbent's it's a hard thing no matter what. And to be younger, you're 32 years
but
old.
I like to say 23, but I'll live.
Yeah, 32 years old. Can't imagine. I could barely tie my shoes still at 32. But you're doing this and taking this on to change things in Bay Minette. To, I think, the way I hear it, to make more people like you stay there. You stayed. You live in Bay Minette, but you work elsewhere. We've talked about this. Yeah. Friends of I've had in Bay Minette, which I love, charming city, but they all work somewhere else.
Yes.
You and I talked about this when you were campaigning. Novellas is a big story. There's always these things happening, but you are right next door. Can you get people to work there and buy these charming dang houses in Bay Minette? They're awesome. That, you know, or, and with that comes the city building.
You know, my first, I really want to focus these next year and a half, 2 years on the workforce development. Okay. And of course, continuing it from there, I want to get strong partnerships with Coastal, with the University of South Alabama, all those other colleges and universities, and our own career development center. That is right there, you know, the Alabama Career Center that's right there in Bay Minette, and start working in the community on that workforce. Because currently, I think we're at 32% poverty rate, and we're also, our median salary is about $39,000. When you go 20 minutes down the road, median salary is $75,000 in Spanish Fort and those. So we have to develop our workforce more so that we can get those numbers to get the poverty rate down and get the median salary increase. And it's based off of the skill set that is there in that workforce. Maybe we haven't had those opportunities before, but now Novellas is there.
Yeah.
And now there's these other businesses that are coming off the backs of Novellas coming in. So we need to make sure that our existing base has the tools in order to benefit from those rewards that will come.
You know, I think about this too, and I don't, and your perspective really at 32 is great, because you're in that group, you're in that cohort of people that are younger, building families and a career. You give them a job, and then you got to keep them living in Bay Minette. So with that comes services, right? I mean, we talk about, you know, a young person in a small town. I've told you the story of my mother, you know, born in a small town, you know, and left pretty quickly after high school. How do you make it to where, okay, that person can work at that job, but that they're going to come lay their head back down inside Bay Minette city limits each night? What do you do to incentivize? Is it more restaurants? Is it more parks? Is it more activity? What's the secret sauce?
It is all of the above at the right measured pace. You have to be very aggressive. So you have to have the jobs. You have to have the restaurants. You have to have the stores to go to, the grocery stores, the other retail stores for clothing and shoes. Mm-hmm. You also have to have the activities, whether it's the youth, the recreation department, having all of those avenues for kids with special needs as well as, you know, our regular kids. But also diving into making sure that the utility service is there for these young adults. So it's a quality of life balance that we have to have. Now, when we start going down this rabbit hole here, then we're going to get into talking about drainage and the potholes and all these different things, because these young adults, they're getting these jobs. They want to entertain themselves in the area in which they live. Mm-hmm. And that little 10-mile is, you know, if I'm pretty sure there's some psychologists that can probably describe it better, but it's like a 10-mile radius that we want to just thrive in. And we're not worried about anything else. Yeah. It's our community.
Yeah.
And so in order to do that, you have to have the job. You have to have the house, the affordable house. You have to have the transportation. You have to have the restaurants to go to, the store to go to. And if you're starting a family, you have to have activities for your children.
Yeah. Where's the activity? Where's the school? Where's the grocery store? I mean, some of those things, like at a certain point, you're young enough, it's entertainment and fun. Then you start a family. It's like, okay, I like a little entertainment and fun, but I got to have the school close and the grocery store. Yes. And where's the doctor, you know?
And peace of mind. You got to feel safe in your community. You also, you know, maybe you don't want to hear that loud noise.
All
the time, you know. And there's some communities that are, you know, they're probably subjected to that loud noise because of the construction and different things here. But that's all a part of the growing pains.
We come back from the break. More with Mayor-elect of Bay Minette. Joshua Brown's our guest. We'll get some of your questions from the text line at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, Talk 123, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. And a reminder here, Dalton would get mad if I didn't remind y'all. Got to get your picks in for the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of y'all in College Pick'em. Remember, get those picks in for this weekend's game before they start. And yes, we talk trash, Dalton and Dan and I and many others from here that are in the College Pick'em. We're in just to start trouble. And I'm not starting much trouble. I'm at like 140 right now in the rankings. But y'all are the ones who win the prizes and the great prize pack with all the grilling gear from Spring Hill Ace Hardware. So y'all keep it up. There's some of y'all that have had some fantastic runs. I see some people climbing back up the ranks here. This is my weekend. I'll be back there with you. But y'all continue to get those picks put in for College Pick'em. All right, continuing our conversation with the mayor-elect of Bay Minette, Joshua Brown, and mayor-elect till y'all November?
Or November when? The 3rd.
November the 3rd. So you got that on the calendar.
Yeah.
Be going in November the 3rd. And obviously, you've talked about a bunch of stuff on the campaign trail, how you implement that once you get into that office. I mean, have you thought that through? You know, like, there's a things that should be done, you want to do, and now you're about to go into government where sometimes things slow down.
Things tend to slow down. There's several constraints, whether, you know, ethics, legal, or just financial, that do exist. I have spent the last couple of weeks meeting with several department heads so we can go ahead and have that peaceful transition, as well as when November the 3rd hits, is not so much of a learning curve. It is, all right, let's get to work. I was telling my mother, who was my campaign manager, I said, people ask me, how do I feel? And I'm grateful, but I'm ready to get to work.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. So even
but, yeah, anybody with strong ideas like that, yeah. you want to get to work.
Yeah. There's only so many idea popping
mm-hmm. right. you can without do. Implementing.
Let's start implementing things and seeing how they are combing out to be, and if we need to pivot. Let's pivot the way we need to.
And you, as the full-time gig, I mean, you're a problem solver,
yes.
right? Do you build have you built like a triage list for Babynet? Like you would say, this is number one, this is number two, three, four.
Yes, I do drainage, traffic, transportation. These are some high priorities. Public safety is always mm-hmm. in a high one. We've actually started tricking down in some crime rates, but there's the issue with the guns. Right now. So those are critical issues that have been very much expressed from the citizens in Baymanette, as well as just having things to do, activities, whether they want to go bowling, whether there's, you know, any other kind of cultural activities that the citizens of Baymanette have been demanding to see return
yeah.
or actually come to our town.
Okay, there's some things they want to see come back that yes. have been there before, so...
Yeah, one of I mentioned the bowling.
Yes.
Now that
is there not a bowling alley
there
now?
There was a bowling alley there, but it wasn't profitable.
Okay.
And it was a drain on the city, so they decided to part ways with it, and now we have to find. I would like for more of the private sector to come in mm-hmm. and actually take up that charge. And
it's kind of coming back. I listened to a long form podcast about the business of bowling alleys the other day. I'm just that mm-hmm. much of a nerd. There was like it shrank. There was some consolidation. Now it's come back stronger. People,
I blame it on the French fries.
Now what?
The bowling. There's something about bowling alley French fries that are just, you know, even though they're not the most healthiest thing.
No, but
us,
they're fantastic.
Yeah,
yeah. You've got to have. Yeah, you have to have.
And we have several opportunity zones where, you know, that old standard furniture building. There's so many different areas where if an investor comes in, hey. Here's the perfect spot, right off the highway.
Mm-hmm.
You tear down the building, work on the drainage, and build your entertainment venue.
You know, the drainage thing, we just have a couple minutes left, but I've looked at this as watching municipal governments all over our area. And I often joke, I said, let's celebrate when we have drainage projects, because the drainage projects and sewer projects are not ones where you have like a mayor and council come out with the big scissors and the giant ribbon and everybody, you know, they're not the ones that get the most press. But as a citizen of a place, those are, I'm glad it's on the top, because public safety, drainage, roads, mm-hmm. they're not the sexiest used term, the sexiest things to work on, but they are probably the most important.
Yes, yes. You know, they, in partnership with the county commission, there was the 30 Cube project that was approved, and that construction will start over the next couple months or so. And that drainage for certain areas is actually identified in there, and there's plans for that. So I'm glad to see, all right, we can start getting this ball rolling on mm-hmm. tackling these drainage issues, because as we talked earlier about home ownership, mm-hmm. having more young people have that home ownership in the city of Baymanette, well, you kind of don't want to own a home that's getting washed away.
Yeah, yeah, I would say that would be a bad thing on it. Well, I'm excited about November 3rd and watching you in Baymanette. And like I said, I think potential of Baymanette, I've said it forever, just having friends there, that it's got this great potential. Let's just, something needs to happen to push it over. And maybe, you know, you new in office, Novella's coming in. By this time, you know, next year, we're talking a completely different story. You're like, well, I got to, you know, too many people are like moving in here. There's too many people, Sean.
You know, we welcome the people.
Yeah.
Welcome the people. But as we have this tremendous growth that none of us have ever seen this growth. At what it's actually going to be. We've never seen it, but we just have to have the best minds, the most qualified in the position to make sure that we are filtering what that growth looks like for us. As we mentioned offline, as we grow and that the people come in and the cars come in, we also need to make sure that we're addressing that transportation issue, that traffic issue, because
mm-hmm.
we don't want bottlenecking in our town.
Now, you don't want to be like everywhere else in Baldwin County?
Oh, no. Baymanette will be the leader, and we will be different.
Okay, good stuff. And congratulations once again. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
All right. And come November 3rd, we'll be talking not just mayor-elect, but the mayor of Baymanette. And he's got some ideas. I want to hear from y'all as well. Going forward, Baymanette folks who listen to us, Joshua Brown, your upcoming mayor, give me a text here at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1:35, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Good time to do. To check in with my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars, where it sounds like even more inventory has arrived. Hey, David.
Hey, bud. Yeah, we got in a couple of Ford crew cab trucks, two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive. Got another crew cab Titan that came in. We've had a few of those in the last couple of weeks. We do really good with the Titans. People like them. And the small SUVs, I mean, we have probably got, no kidding, 40 small SUVs on the ground, and anything from 10,000 up, and they're all real clean. I mean, Honda CRVs, Chevrolet Trax, to Acadia, GMC Acadias. We got three of those, I believe. So we got a great, great variety of small SUVs.
All right, people can check out SUVs, trucks, and everything else. How do they find you?
You can go to the website, is lcmmotorcars.com. And you pull Carfax and everything there. You can fill out a credit application and everything there if you want. Come straight to us. You can give us a call at 251-375-0068, or just come see us in person. We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A.
Hey, thanks, David.
Hey, bud.
All right, there goes David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Yeah, see the reason, like, when you pull up at a stoplight, look how many LCM vehicles are there. That's for a reason. All right, this story here, I want to come back. This is a story we talked about when it broke. And and at a certain point, it was a discussion of whether Governor Ivey was going to do anything, change anything at DHS for the state. Remember this? This story is a heartbreaking story. And it's one that on its own... Okay, just until we get this, on its own, if it happened one time, I could say, well, the head of DHS in the state can't be, you know, held responsible for what happened one time. But I'll read you this story. But also, if you look around, the backlog of lawsuits out there against DHS in the state of Alabama. All right, update here. This is from WBRC TV. Said, months after a three-year-old boy died while in care of the Alabama Department of Human Resources, the contract worker charged in the case faced a preliminary court hearing. Now, you remember this story of Keela Stanford. Now, she was a contractor for the state, right, who was taking this three-year-old for a meeting with his father, like a supervised meeting, and then was supposed to go back to his daycare. He didn't make it there because he died in the back of a vehicle in the heat. So Keela Stanford accused of leaving three-year-old KJ Starks in a hot car for 5 hours while she was working for Covenant Services, a third-party contractor for DHR. She appeared in court for a preliminary hearing. A quote here from Courtney French, who is the attorney representing KJ's family, said, "This is a mother's worst nightmare. No family should have to go through what this family is going through with their three-year-old." End quote. Birmingham police. So here's this is where we get some more information from this. Remember, at first we were told that Keela Stanford, the contractor here who picked up KJ, had gone to, what was it, like a tobacco shop and then something else, you know, with him in the car, and then got to the house and went inside with the kid still in the car. So more information came out this week on this. It said Birmingham police say Stanford picked KJ up around 9 a.m. July 22nd to take him to the DHR office in Bessemer for a supervised visit with his father. After the visit, she returned. And listen, this is her job is to protect that baby. That is her job. Said after the visit, she returned to the Eastlake neighborhood near his daycare, but didn't drop him off. So she's close to the daycare, but she didn't drop him off at this point. Detectives testified at the hearing that Stanford made three stops that day. Okay, so she has a kid in the car. She makes three stops. Two of those stops were in the same block as the toddler's daycare. She also returned home more than once while KJ was still in the backseat of her car, according to investigators. Now, one thing I got to ask here, is this standard operating procedure that you just keep the kid all day? They're supposed to go back to the daycare? Or is she truly, from the time she took him from the supervised supervised meeting with the father. She didn't even know he was there. Had forgotten. Okay, here's this quote from the attorney. This is the attorney for KJ's family. Said, instead of returning, so there's more of that narrative. Instead of returning KJ back to the daycare where he's supposed to be, she went to a Church's Chicken location across the street and then to a pizza location. She was two blocks away from his daycare, and instead of returning KJ to his daycare, she drove home. That's the attorney. Now, here we go. Detectives at this hearing said this. Now, picture this child is in this vehicle in July heat in Alabama. Detectives say Stanford admitted she was negligent. And I think that goes beyond argument. She was negligent while KJ was in her care. They say during the 5 hours he was left inside her vehicle, she was inside her home watching movies with family members and opening packages from Amazon. So watching some movies and opening Amazon packages. Still no thought in her head that, hey, there's a 3-year-old child in the back of my vehicle. So it's just some more of the details here. It's, like I said, this horrendous story on its own is one thing. Right? As you look at DHS for the state. Because, I mean, we have the individual responsibility. Okay, primary is the individual responsibility of Keila Stanford. Right? That's number one, two, three, four. Now, if you go, hey, how is DHS in the state of Alabama working? Well, when the story first came up, I said, well, it's probably this is a one-off, and you know, nobody in a management position could know that this person was going to do this on that day. Fair enough. But some digging around showed me there were multiple lawsuits, not specific to this case, but from other families and other things that happened against DHS. Governor Ivey said she had full confidence in the head of DHS. When these other stories come out, I wonder if we look at like the preponderance of the evidence and say, what the hell's happening at DHS in Alabama? That story in particular, though, breaks your heart. Lisa says, please tell me they checked her blood and breath after being so reckless with that precious baby. I have no idea if they did that. That was not in the what came out of that story from this week up in Birmingham. Stanford remains free on bond. Her attorney declined to comment during the hearing or following the hearing. But, I mean, if you're going to do this for, I mean, is there not a standard set from DHS? If this is a thing that can happen, heck, you hear the PSAs, the stuff happens, people forget a child. If you're going to use your personal vehicle to transport these kids, shouldn't there be some kind of alarm set on the car? You have to have an alarm that says if there's somebody still in there, the alarm goes off, something. And, even if she was busy trying to save the United States from a terrorist attack, it's still not acceptable. But to say Stanford admitted she was negligent while KJ was in her care, they say for the 5 hours he was left inside the vehicle, that Stanford was inside her home watching movies and opening packages from Amazon. Disgusting. Michael says, I guarantee you that she and 75% of DHS contractors and employees would fail a drug test. You know, something that, speaking of that, I was talking to people and it's got off record stuff, so watch what I say here for now, but hopefully I'll get these people on to talk about it. That we talk about workforce development in Mobile. And, you know, every time they're in here talking about it, I said, y'all just need to go into high school. And not use a bunch of flowery language. Go in and say, hey, who wants to make $100,000 in their 20s? Yeah, I mean, that would have got my attention in high school. We'd be like, oh, okay. I'm saying that's the reason you're having problems recruiting. Get the word that the recruiting is actually successful here into the trades. Recruiting. But those, many of them that are recruited and trained, go through the training, whatever, and go to wherever they're placed here, whatever job they get or they select, and they can't pass a drug test. That I don't think this person told me that they would be at full levels of staffing and recruitment for Mobile with workforce development if it wasn't, but they said it is significant. That somebody, young person's recruited, all right, that's great, go through the training. There's this awesome job. If you just do these basic things, you have this awesome job. You will have a you'll make a living. You won't be scrapping. You're going to have a life. You could buy a house, raise a family. Can't pass the drug test. At a certain point, I mean, kids, I mean, which one's more important? B-Dark says, put her blank in the back of a hot vehicle and go home and hang out with your family and open packages. Yeah, it's just, once again, it still wouldn't be okay if she was, you know, figuring out the Da Vinci Code to forget the child. But, I mean, the, hey, we're inside watching movies. Is that what, is that what happens when, was she on the clock then? Does she go in and watch movies and open Amazon packages while a baby's in the car? All right, coming right back. More of your calls and texts at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Good time to check in with the governor over at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Ron, man, what a story of precious metals it's been this year and how people can buy them from you. I learned something new the other day. Anna was telling me about these gold-backed things. What are these?
Gold-backs are it's currency that's actual tradable in states. Like Florida just adopted it. And what they are is that they're look like currency except for they're colored gold, obviously. And the back of the gold is a foil of actual 24 karat gold, and each note has how much it has as far as how many thousandths of an ounce. And they trade pretty much at their gold value minus a premium. So if you were in Florida, we're trading with somebody that had the machines and were actually using it, you could actually spend it just like currency. In Florida, Utah, Wyoming, Montana, Connecticut, there's multiple states that have adopted these and are using them. So it's kind of a way to have actually gold as currency, and a lot of people collect them too. We've seen more people buying them for collections than anything else, but it's amazing. Just like anything else, Sean, note the $50 notes that were selling for about $180 just about 2 months ago are trading at almost $500 now. That's how much gold's gone up in just 60 days.
Does the shutdown, I mean, I look at the price today of gold, pretty sexy, $3,913, or I don't know what the latest is, but that was earlier.
Yep.
Does the shutdown move that needle on gold and silver?
A long-term shutdown can, because more and more people are going to want to hedge for the dollar loss, so gold and silver will go up. At first, it didn't really flutter much at all because it's still just a couple days into it, 3 days into the shutdown. So if they drag this out a long time, which hopefully they won't, but if they do, it can cause problems down the road for the U.S. dollar, which, of course, will strengthen the actual price of gold and silver. So I'd say currencies are safe for short term, but they could fluctuate. If you had a lot of dollars, I'd be worried long term with between the spending and the shutdown and everything else. I definitely want to make sure I had a hedge to protect those dollars.
The spending. They can't help themselves, Ron. The spending and the spending and the spending and the spending. Also,
if you and I tried to do that, we'd be in jail, Sean.
Correct. Thank you. And I'm not even asking for you. How about you just deficit spend less? I think neutral budgeting would be great, but how about just a little bit less of the overspending?
No, they keep throwing out, well, we just want to spend another $1.2 on healthcare real quick. Well, you don't have $1.2 so you can't spend it. That would be my
That's what happens when you have a mint that can press out the money. Also, on precious metals, gold, everybody talks gold, but the thing I've been buying from y'all forever, and I was buying it back in the teens, silver is just really making some headway.
Yeah, it could surpass, and I think it will surpass the all-time high this year. I know gold already has, but silver's trading right now at 48 an ounce, even as the spot price bid. So pretty respectable, and there was a correction this week, which is always healthy to see, and a lot of people came in on that day and purchased. A few people sold, but most people were buying that day, so we've been moving lots of silver. And there's still a lot of up area on that. I don't think we've hit the peak yet. Nobody wants to buy at the top, but we always recommend people use it as a hedge anyway. So if you buy it and it drops, it means the dollar got stronger, so the hedge is doing its job. You want something to help you protect your dollars and protect your stock portfolio.
Okay. We'll talk about people who want to come in and purchase some of this. What can they buy? Is it all in ingots, or coins, or like what's the breakdown here? And gold backs,
Yeah, gold backs. For silver, you got 90% constitutional silver, pre-64 coins. That's available. It's probably the most popular for people that are worried about maybe having to barter down the road, because you can have a dime, quarter, and a half. If you have a 1 ounce gold, it's really hard to cut chunks off that and trade that. So people that are worried, even if you're not worried, it's always smart to not have it all in very large denominations. Don't buy just all 100-ounce silver bars and 1 ounce gold. Get some fractional stuff, so if you need to sell some for an emergency, you don't have to cash in the whole lot.
Makes sense to me. Give people directions to come see you.
We're located at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. They can find us on the web at mobilebaycoins.com, or just give us a call, 251-725-1590.
Hey, thank you, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean.
All right, there goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Grab a couple of these texts here. Larry and Daphne said, I tell every high school aged 16 to 22-year-old that if they come to work at a company I work at, they will pay you to learn. After 2 years, you can test for your journey and plumber's license, and you can start making high fives to low sixes in your first year as a journeyman. And if you apply yourself there, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to make six figures plus. See, and I like, that's the kind of marketing. I know that, like, there's like soaring language with all these things, and that's good. But I'm just thinking, like, 17-year-old Sean, if you come in and said, hey, you want to make this kind of money? I'd be like, yeah, I can. Okay. And I don't have to wait 10 years. Okay. Tripp says AIDT drug test before they enroll students in training, which I hear that's also a problem. That's one of these issues on the that they go, well, there's all these kids, right? And we talk to them at the high school, and they get in these programs and this and that, and then they can't pass a drug test. That's it's a shame. It's a shame. Also, and we'll probably talk about this more next week, and I know Dan and Dalton discussed it some this morning. Story from LandyapMobile.com from Kyle Hamrick. Headline here, judge questions Ingram's statement of candidacy. So this is the District 2 Battle Royale, right? It's a legal challenge of Mobile District 2 Councilwoman-elect Samantha Ingram's residency by defeated Councilman William Carroll will continue after a judge asked attorneys to consider whether statements of candidacy Ingram signed comply with state law. It's a question about, when she bought the house back here in Mobile, and then the timeline after that, voting in Georgia, right? Well, the lawsuit's out here, and you're getting in a discussion, a back and forth between state law and the Zogby Act, which I think is interesting here, which one is superior. You hear different opinions on that. Says here, Ingram, who won the election, District 2 seat by more than 600 votes in August, appeared in Mobile County Circuit Court Thursday morning, nearly 1 month after Carroll filed a lawsuit against her on grounds she did not reside in Mobile for a full year before the election, as the Zogby Act requires. Which, by the way, too, how many people that run for office go somewhere else and then come back to run for office here? Have you noticed that? Not all, but I mean, there's definitely a percentage of people that do that. Carroll's lawsuit claimed that Ingram does not own property in District 2 with a homestead exemption, and called for the court to void the results of the District 2 election. And then here's the other part of it I thought that was of interest, and remove Ingram from office and set a special election. And the suit also petitions the judge to bar Ingram from running again in a special election. Which, by the way, looking at that point, if that special election, I think it's November, I forget where the time. The special election was like, I'm sure in December, I think it may be November, that any question about residency time would be solved. But Carroll's suit says, and you would bar Ingram from running in the special election. Now, you talk about a situation, and I know Councilman Carroll, but I mean, this is a situation where you're saying, okay, I have a question about this last election about residency. And by the way, I also would like you to keep her from running again. Well, I imagine so. The person that beat you in the thing. So we'll see where this goes. There's a lot of detail here and a discussion of the Zogby Act and state code. And it's a great article you can read over at LandyapMobile.com. It's right there on the front page, or just click Kyle Hamrick's name there and you'll see it. All right. Michael says Shabari Figgers, a poster child for Carpetbagger from D.C., is a D2 rep. Michael, we can go I'm just thinking about this list of people. They. And this is kind of the brain drain question, right? kids that'll leave here and go to Atlanta or, you know, in Figure's case at D.C. But, I mean, they go away, but then there's a chance to run for an office, so they come home to run for the office. And I don't know if that's a bad thing or a good thing. I just know it's something that stands out to me. Yeah, it stands way out to me. All right, Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Join us tomorrow for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors at 7. Mike Ward and I are hosting. We're hanging out with our buddy Captain Bobby Abrascato. What you need to know about fall fishing in the Delta and the Bay and all that. We'll talk to him about that tomorrow morning at 7. All right, y'all have a great one.